Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, the summer movie season is off with a bang, or should we say a stun, with the J.J. Abrams-directed Star Trek movie having the 25th biggest opening weekend in history. Somebody has money, at least to go to the movies. More than $75 million taken in. But the Star Trek shows and movies have always been about more than just space travel. That's why we're talking about it on this show. Essentially a soap opera in space, Star Trek is as much about interpersonal and intergroup relationships, questions of race, gender, and understanding, as it is about warp speeds and stun guns. So we will open up the phones now to ask a simple question, a couple of them, really. What have you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world? What has the post-racial, gender-equal, coalition-based Star Trek taught you? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. What have you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world? We've been getting some of these in on our comments page and our Facebook page, and we'll read some. And you can call 212-433-WNYC. Also, we'll take any 30-second reviews of the Star Trek prequel that opened this weekend. Just promise us one thing. No spoilers. 212-433-WNYC. It can be the original series that you talk about with respect to what you've learned about the real world from the Star Trek world, or the early movies, or First Generation, or the movie that opened this past weekend, or the Picard generation, or any of it. What have you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world? And even if you don't want to offer your philosophical answer, we will take a simple movie review in 30 seconds. No spoilers. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, in putting together this segment, we scoured the outer reaches of the universe to find the right person to join us to discuss the new Star Trek movie and the Star Trek series in general. But lo and behold, we discovered that there was a huge Star Trek nerd in close orbit to the Brian Lehrer Show and the WNYC studios. It is on the media's very own Brooke Gladstone, who, as you will soon discover, is a total Trekkie. Hi, Brooke. Live long and prosper.
Kapla, as the Klingons say.
So just how big a Trekkie are you?
I am a huge Trekkie. I am such a Trekkie that on the 40th anniversary a few years ago, I actually devoted 17 minutes of On the Media to its cultural impact. And it had a lot on the media, actually. It pioneered all sorts of participatory modes that have gone on to this day. And we'll be rerunning that. Of course, I saw the movie, and I was a follower of all four series because most of us Star Trek nerds didn't like the last one, Enterprise.
What do you mean participatory modes? Because in 1966, when Star Trek debuted, I mean, there was no web. There was no real interactivity between audience and film or TV show.
That's right. And it only lasted 3 years. How is it that it took so many years for the next generation to come on? It's because the fans formed coalitions, because they started writing their own sequels, because they created backstories, because they put the pressure on, because they used it as an organizing principle to create not just more Star Treks, but a philosophy.
And we should point out before we go to our full board of calls that this movie is a prequel, so in theory there aren't any spoilers to reveal. Nevertheless, we will exercise discretion when talking about the new film. So, Brooke, give us your 30-second review.
I thought it was an appropriate homage to a lot of the. Oh, there's my cell phone. I forgot that I had brought it in. Do you recognize this?
Oh, my God. Every time your husband or anyone else calls you, you hear that?
It's the theme from The Next Generation, my personal favorite. I'll switch it off.
You just gave me an idea. They should invent the next generation of cell phones so that you can make the ringtone of your choice show up on whoever you're calling's phone. How about that?
That's excellent. Absolutely excellent. I thought it was a good film. In fact, I thought it was incredibly clever because, and I won't talk about it, but they organize the plot in such a way that they can take the series anywhere without respect to what we already know about Star Trek. I thought the casting was wonderful, and of course it was a J.J. Abrams well-paced thriller, which is unusual for a Star Trek film, but I could accept that.
So what have you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world, Dania in Brooklyn. Hi, Dania. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
So my parents were Star Trek junkies in the 60s, so this is a comment about the original show.
Uh-huh.
So as a biracial kid, growing up in the projects, poor, we saw that show, and I learned that I could be part of making the future happen. Watching Uhura and seeing Spock and seeing people that are very different working together to make a future, I found really empowering as a kid.
That's something to take away from Star Trek. Brooke, and I'll bet Dania's not the only one.
No, not at all. Many people have made that observation. Whoopi Goldberg, who went on to have a regular role in Star Trek The Next Generation, said it was important to her for the same reason. And Nichelle Nichols, who played Uhura, tells the story that at some point in the run, she was sick of it and she wanted to leave, and Martin Luther King personally appealed to her to keep doing the show because she was the only black woman on TV who wasn't playing a maid.
Wow. Dania, did you and your friends talk about that inspiration that you were getting from the show at the time?
No, it was much later, before people started to realize it. I think that it was so cutting edge at the time. Mm-hmm. People liked the show, but they didn't talk about it in that personal way.
Right.
It was more like a fantasy program, and I think even it probably didn't occur to me until much later the impact it was having.
Dania, thanks for calling.
Sure.
And Jerry in Nutley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry.
What
did you learn about the real world from the Star Trek world?
Well, I'm a political scientist, and the thing that appealed to me about the show was the positive message that we get past all the problems. If you remember, it was Cold War. We were all really... World War III was a real possibility with the Soviets and all this, and it was sort of... The backdrop was, we're past that. These are the new adventures of the human race.
Jerry, thank you. And so, Brooke, what do you make of this note that listener Alvin just posted to our comments page? Post-racial? Ha. In the original Star Trek show, we had an inscrutable Asian techie nerd, an emotional Russian pro-Soviet stereotype, a black woman working the switchboard, a Scottish engineer, a stereotype from another age and place that's unfamiliar to many of us. But hey, when all the women are dressed in miniskirts, all is forgiven.
Well, I think you can't take it entirely out of its time and its place. I mean, in some ways, it's very much like the comic book World War II groups where everybody was pulling together, but you had the kid from Brooklyn, you had the Italian, you had the black guy. Yeah, they were all fulfilling certain stereotypical character roles, but the point here was that it didn't separate them. It brought them together, and they each brought something to it. I mean, Gene Roddenberry, who conceived the series, was originally a PR guy for the Los Angeles Police Department. He started out in television writing scripts for Dragnet. I mean, the fact is he wasn't, you know, so much of a forward thinker that he could imagine a world without character stereotypes, but he could imagine a world where lots of different people could work together in peace.
Possibility is that the series evolved also and got more and more
Absolutely.
Utopian through the various series and the movies. Kate Mulgrew played Captain Janeway on Star Trek Voyager in the mid-90s, and by Deep Space Nine, you had Avery Brooks playing Commander Sisko, an African-American captain.
That's right, and the show certainly did evolve, although I think I might not say that it got more utopian, because Deep Space Nine was by far the darkest of all the series and actually departed a little bit from Roddenberry's vision, because Roddenberry felt that humanity, fundamental humanity, could conquer all. And in Deep Space Nine, frequently it was the cause of the problem.
Stephen has a 30-second review. Hi, Stephen. You're on WNYC. Stephen, you there?
I am, yeah.
You have a 30-second review of the new Star Trek movie?
You know, I'm not a Trekkie, but definitely enjoyed the film. I think it did a great job of sort of embracing a lot of the positive elements that people have come to know and love about the series and the mythology surrounding it in the last 40 years while really laying the groundwork for some very positive new beginnings. And I think it was a great movie itself. It'll be a great sequel and probably a few more following that.
Thank you. Raj in Washington Heights, do you have a 30-second review?
Oh, yeah. This movie, I had gone up to Toronto to see it.
Toronto?
Major impact.
You went to a film festival?
I went to an IMAX, and end-to-end, the gist of it was I went to see a family member who is, you know, facing cancer, and I was really caught up in being and taking risks and having it and alternate reality. I mean, it was awesome. It opens up a lot for me. My career, my kids. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but this is powerful stuff.
Maybe just a little. Ray in Rockland, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ray.
Hi. In 1967, moved down to Jackson, Mississippi for a year, and Jackson only had two networks. So they combined the shows, and they did not carry Star Trek because it was racially integrated. And every other Friday night, we used to go to Della's Motel and watch it. So I never saw the whole second season, but I was like, you know, a New Yorker, and I was really stunned that they wouldn't carry the show.
So the local affiliate, what network was it originally?
I don't know whether it was originally on NBC.
NBC.
And I don't know what were the two affiliates.
So
that
the affiliates in Jackson, Mississippi actually did not run it.
They didn't run it in Jackson. You had to go to a place that had cable and had a lot of other stations to get it.
Interesting. I don't know if they had cable in 1967.
They didn't have cable commercially available. Maybe it was available in certain
in hotels.
Limited, yeah.
Interesting. Now, Nelson from Queens writes, horrible Trek. Might as well be watching a Michael Bay movie. Bad dialogue, bad story, bad production design. Plot hole so big you could drive the Enterprise straight through. Brooke, what's your 30-second review?
Well, I mean, the thing is like I said, I thought it was a very an appropriate homage to the series, to the characters, but it didn't really carry any of the heavy themes that Trekkies are Trekkies are made fun of for embracing a lot of these themes and carrying them around. I mean, you had, you know, who they in some places has been elevated to something almost approaching a religion, certainly a creed. In this
certainly
case,
true for Raj in Upper Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a deep examination of what it means to be human throughout all the series. And this was really, you know, defeating an enemy. It was, you know, it was an action film. You know, it wasn't the alpha and omega of Star Trek, but I didn't think, but, you know, it had a lot of great production values.
You actually did a piece for On the Media a few years ago about Star Trek, and you told the story of Barbara Adams, a juror on the Whitewater trial who wore a Star Trek uniform while in the juror's box.
Mm-hmm.
What was that all about?
Well, you know, she said that she was doing it in order to convey her feeling about humanity. And as a matter of fact, I think I have her remark here. She said that, you know, fans shouldn't be ashamed of being, you know, of loving Star Trek. And in fact, you don't even need a series because Star Trek is really an idea. That it's a deal, it's an idea about the future, how we can survive and work at community. And she wore her uniform with pride.
Mark in Cedarhurst, I think, has Star Trek according to Freud, right, Mark?
Yep, absolutely right. That, as a matter of fact, when I turned in my original idea for my first master's thesis in graduate school a number of years ago, so the professor said, what are you, on drugs? Because I suggested to him that basically Captain Kirk is the ego, Spock is the superego, and McCoy is the id, and this was Roddenberry's original construct that basically the Enterprise is a metaphor for man, and that we have to boldly go where nobody else has gone before, and it's a journey, it's an exploration, and our ego is the captain of our ship. That's who has to make the choices, but we have inputs from either side, one that's very super logical and telling us what the right thing to do, you know, Kirk, you know, Captain, the logical thing to do is so forth. And then we have the id or the other impulses, which are the very human basic ones, which are McCoy, you know, Jim, you can't do that. You know, being very full of, you know, emotion and passion. And we have to, even though they're both very well-intentioned and they're wanting to the best for us, we ultimately, as the ego, have to make choices going forward. And, of course, The Next Generation just super expanded on that theme with having Counselor Troy really sitting right by the captain's side, and then there was, of course, Number One, and, you know, blindness, but, you know, it's a fabulous series.
There you go. Mark, I got to leave it there because we're going to run out of time, but that was well expostulated, and, we're talking really about the sociology of Star Trek. There's the psychology.
Yeah, although I don't know if I mean, maybe I don't understand exactly what it is, because I thought it was always a phrase that meant the darker impulses. And if that were the case, then in the first series, The id would be a recurring character, though not on the crew, called Harry Mudd.
Harry Mudd. he was an id with a very dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
Have you heard this whole Obama is Spock parallel that some are making out there? Henry Jenkins, co-director of the MIT Comparative Media Studies Program, has written that Obama is at home with both blacks and whites, someone whose mixed racial background has forced him to become a cultural translator. And just like Spock's half-Vulcan, half-human state, according to him. And Glenn Greenwald at Salon wrote last week about how Obama takes the Spock-like rationality to most of the tough issues he confronts.
I love that. The only difference here is that he's better than Spock, because Spock could never reconcile the two sides of his nature, and Obama seems to do a pretty good job at that.
He still went out and got a dog named Bo, right? According to Slate, though, it's commonly thought that the first Star Trek convention was held in 1972 at a Hilton in Manhattan. According to diehard Trek historians, the first one actually took place in March 1969 at the Newark Public Library. So there's a little fun fact that Slate contributed to this. Barbara in Old Tappan, you have a 30-second review?
No, I just had a comment about the impact and the way looking at the world through Star Trek.
Okay.
And that is that, you know, in all this time, we have only male captains. And most of the, even though there are female characters, they're not represented in the same terms as women are represented in the society. And I think that's true of our society as a whole. You look at the...
So it's the glass ceiling, but Brooke, I think we mentioned that.
Voyager was a conscious effort to break the glass ceiling by putting Kate Mulgrew in the role of Captain Janeway. It is true that, you know, subsequent Star Treks, some of which, you know, they haven't had any more starting female captains, although they bumped into captains and other, you know, commodores and things who have been female from time to time. But they have been aware of that, the creators of the series, and they really did make an effort in Voyager to correct that failing.
I think Chris in Northvale is going to get the last word on what we learn about the real world from the Star Trek world. Chris, 30 seconds.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good. Real quick.
I learned I'm a fan of the original series, and that it taught me that anything is possible, that humanity survived all what it was up against, and Star Trek just gave us all hope for the future.
Who was the Bernie Madoff of Star Trek? Maybe we'll find that out in the next sequel, although what has come out now is the prequel. Thank you all for your 30-second reviews. No spoilers were aired. And for what you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world. And Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media, and our resident Trekkie, thank you.
You're welcome. You're playing the Next Generation theme, like my phone.
Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Eileen Markey produced this program with intern help from Justin Pastana, major Trekkie himself. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer. Live long and prosper.